At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. We are back. We are here with a really fun episode today, all things considered, from topic to the time of the year to the fact that it's all three of us today. My name is Elijah Evans. I am joined by my co-hosts both at once, Jeff Cohen and Dylan Barnes. This is fun. This is going to be cool for us to get to do a little bit of a three-person here. We're going to be testing this out going forward a little bit. I think we're going to have Jeff bounce back and forth a little between James and Ian and Dylan and myself and do some cool three-person stuff here where Jeff gets to kind of just showcase what he's been seeing down in Carolina. We get to have a different dynamic. We get to ask each other questions, and we're gonna have fun with it for sure. So first of all, before we get into some news, some headlines, some July top performers, how are you both doing?
I've been doing good. It's been fun, especially with the announcement of the JB merger partnership. I don't know what we're calling it, but it's been really fun recently, especially with the White Sox winning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a heck of a fun time of year. You know, you go from the draft to the trade deadline, and now you're seeing guys coming out to the affiliates this week. Just a lot of exciting things going on in the minor leagues and some really strong performances. Some real
100%.
Breakout guys.
It's been a fun time from the draft to the deadline last week. Obviously, a little bit of a quiet deadline, but still always a fun time. And now we've got, you know, some cool news to talk about. So I want to talk about it off the top here because we already had a question on it. But Future Talks is now part of the Just Baseball Network. So for those who don't know, myself, I'm working full time for Just Baseball now. So running the operations over there, doing a variety of things, working on the call up, things of that nature. So now Just Baseball is working towards building out some more podcasts in our network. It's really a cool opportunity to be able to bring podcasts into the network, just help kind of promote podcasts that we are really big fans of at Just Baseball. Obviously, I'm a little biased here because, I've been with Future Sox for a few years now as well. But no, all the guys at JB, for those who don't know, definitely check out Just Baseball and on the podcast and then all social media platforms. Everybody over there is a huge fan of what we've been doing at Future Sox, and we're super honored to be a part of that now. So it doesn't change a ton from the sake of what we're going to be doing. We're still going to be pumping out content. We're still going to be giving you guys 2 to 3 episodes a week of the Future Sox podcast. Still going to be doing player interviews. I've got a couple really fun ones coming up, but all that means from up is we have a little bit of help on some of the back end of graphics and some potential advertisements. So don't get mad at us if you hear some ads. We're trying to make this as good of an experience as possible, and sometimes that comes with it a little bit. So you know, that is just a taste of what's going to be coming. But you know, I think we're going to get some really cool engagement, and we're going to be able to have, you know, guys like Arm Layton on the show and Jack McMullen, who have some really deep knowledge of prospects, which will be fun. We'll get them on regularly too, which will be cool. And just have a little bit more infrastructure to keep building out the Future Sox podcast and bringing you guys the best content possible.
Yeah,
so that's a little briefer. Dylan's also going to be writing for Just Baseball. So for justbaseball.com, Dylan is going to be kind of taking a little bit of the mantle on some of the stuff that I do, covering the White Sox on the written side of things. My writing time is pretty maxed these days, so I might get into it on occasion, but Dylan is going to be doing some writing over for justbaseball.com, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait to read Dylan's stuff. So should definitely make sure to tune in there at Just BB Media on Twitter, Just Baseball Show on Instagram, the podcast, YouTube, all of the above. It's gonna be cool. We're looking forward to it for sure. I think that's a good question. Somebody asked if there'll be a Patreon. That's definitely something we can look into. I know we have Patreon for, you know, some subscribers. I don't know if it will be a Patreon stream, but I can definitely look into that. So that's the little update there, but won't hold you guys too much longer. Truly not a ton is going to change from the listening perspective, other than maybe a couple advertisements here and there, and hopefully some cool graphics online and then some other cool added features there and some access as well. For today, we got a lot to go through. We're going to fly through it here, hopefully keep it to about an hour. I'm traveling right now. I'm all over the place. I know Jeff and Dylan have both done some moving around, having various things going on. So we're going to just catch up on all of it. We're going to start with the big leagues. We're going to talk through some big leaguers. We're going to hit a couple trade guys that we haven't talked about too much. And then we're going to get into some kind of projecting towards 26 and finish it out with the top performers of July. That's a lot. Let's start with the guy, the man of the last 2 weeks. Did either of you in any universe see a world where Colson Montgomery would hit 7 home runs in since the All-Star break and look, not just look like, okay, the last, I think all of us have been patiently optimistic with Colson compared to the average White Sox fan, that the three of us watch him very closely. I think we've always had the stance of like, let's give him time. Let's let the swing develop, see what happens after Arizona with Ryan Fuller. Like, what we'll give it that time. Did either of you see any universe, starting with you, Jeff, where Colson would do this?
I think what we're seeing now is what everyone has expected a year or more ago, right? You know, we thought this great prospect, he's going to tear it up. Then I think everyone dialed back their expectations and said, maybe he'll be just a hair over league average after what we saw this year. I really don't know how to explain it. It's exciting. It's phenomenal, but I really don't know how to explain it. I'm curious what your take is.
Yeah, it's just sort of like he is developing in the big leagues. Like, we didn't see a lot of positive signs in his Charlotte stint. You know, there were flashes of 2 week, 3 week stints where, you know, he would look like that top prospect, but he, for the most part, didn't look the part of that elite blue chip guy while he was in Charlotte. And, you know, now we're seeing him look like that blue chip guy. I mean, Elijah, you mentioned 7 homers since the All-Star break. The funny thing with Colson is, you want to know how many walks he has since the All-Star break in just under 60 plate appearances? Guess how many walks?
60 plate appearances. I'm going to go 7.
Exact opposite. 0.
I was going to say, I thought it was 0. A few, but that's crazy. Wow.
0. Yeah. Wow. He's got an identical .259 batting average and on base, a .655 slugging to put his OPS at a .914 OPS since the All-Star break. It's a 22.5 barrel rate since the All-Star break. And that's nuts. But like, when you hit the ball as hard as Colson Montgomery can and has been hitting, like, it's unreal stuff from a shortstop. You know, he's been playing a little bit more third recently. Well, now that Mydroth is injured, he's been shifting to short. But like, he's been playing far better than I expected from him right away.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff, honestly. It's funny because he's leaning almost into this like homer kind of power type archetype, right? Which is interesting because that's never who we thought he was going to be when he was coming up. But like, he has the power to go all over the field and go out of this field all over the bark. So it's like he's allowing himself to go a little bit more, you know, up the middle compared to where he was doing last year in the minors, right? He's still pulling a lot for sure, but he's tapping into that power, man. And honestly, at this point, with the way the development has gone, I would be completely content with Colson being more of a lean into the power guy, especially given the structure of this lineup. Like, I'm not opposed to having Colson be a guy that can hit 25 homers. And yeah, the strikeout rate might be a little high. And yeah, the on-base percentage might be a little lower than we originally thought from Colson. But if he can be that thumper as a shortstop or a third baseman, when you look at the archetypes and the rest of this lineup going forward, I'm honestly okay with that.
Yeah, like, because when you have the type of power that Colson Montgomery has, like, I don't want to call him like a Joey Gallo type player where, you know, he's a 3 true outcomes type of guy, because right. In my opinion, Montgomery is a better just pure hitter than that. Like, yeah, he sells out to the pull side at times, but like, if he can hit you 30 homers a year, I think that's gravy, especially coming from a shortstop position, third base. Like, I will more than take that.
Well, especially given, as we look to 2026 and beyond, you know, where's the power on the team coming from?
Yep.
You know, they've got guys who can get the bat on the ball, but there's going to be a bit of a shortage of power.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think that's something they're going to need to address in the offseason still regardless, but Colson leaning into that a little bit is not a bad thing in my opinion, honestly, when you look at how his progression's gone. And, you know, you got to remember, this is a 23-year-old who's doing this at the big league level right now, and I'm not saying it's going to be this level, but it's really exciting. It's really exciting to look at him with the rest of these young guys that have come up this season and say, okay, yeah, he might not be the top 20 prospect in baseball that he looked at and he was kind of looked at as the end of two seasons ago, right? But if this guy's a quality big league contributor, that's another guy you pencil in. If you're penciling in one guy every month this season that comes up and looks like a big league piece, you're penciling in a roster slowly. And they're not there yet, but you can see a lot of things when you look up and down this roster and what's been happening over the past year that you know, that there's a core coming together here.
Yeah, because I'll let you go.
No, go. No, okay, no, no, perfect. Take it.
But yeah, like you said, if you can continue just having hot months, like it's not even like a hot 2 weeks or a hot like six games. It's these guys are putting up month-long performances. You know, we saw Miguel Vargas after his swing change in late April. He tore it up in May and then got adjusted to in June. And now he looks like he's finally back to where he was. And then Chase Mydroth at the beginning of the year, he was batting above 300 until, like, I want to say early May. So, like, if you can just have these guys just prove that, like, all right, we're actual big leaguers. Like, we're going to adjust to the pitching at the big league level and, you know, adjust back once the big league pitchers adjust to how they initially came onto the scene. Like, that's all you can ask for from the young guys this year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So getting into that, we got a couple more guys at the big level to talk about. If we keep going to kind of the next tier of these guys, Kyle Tyrrell and Edgar Caro, I keep preaching this and like, why are they not playing every day? But then you got Lenin Sosa, who has an 800, 850 OPS in the past month. So it's hard to find that time right now, which is crazy. And I'm hoping that with Vargas out, as much as you don't want Vargas out, that'll allow for a handful of more days with Teal and Caro. But when you look at this platoon right now, if this is your catching platoon, in the past month, each guy has played exactly 14 games. So it is a true platoon at this point, which I still don't love. But when you look at this past month, 14 games apiece, Edgar Caro with a 308, 351, 538 slash line. That's an 889 OPS. Kyle Teal with a 297, 354, 444. That's a 796 OPS. So you're essentially averaging an 850 OPS now in the past month from your catching tandem. Yeah, if you play them more, that's going to come down marginally to probably, you know, more of a 750, 800 mark. Both of these guys are big league hitters, guys. Like they are big league bats and they're big league catchers. And I really do believe you got to find a way going into next year to get both them in the lineup. It doesn't need to be 7 days a week, 5 days a week, as opposed to 3.5 each, right? Give me 5 days a week of these guys together. Jeff, do you think, like, is there a change here with the way they're being used, or is it just going to keep being like this? Do you think either, both you guys?
Well, I'm curious how you guys see that, you see these expanded roles. Is it just catching DH, or do you see one of them going to left field or first base? I mean, how do you get that the 5 days a week from both of them?
I think that like the best role, in my opinion, for both of them is just swapping catcher and DH. Like, yeah, you know, you're going to want to get Mike Talkman or Andrew Benintendi off their feet here and there, which
that's
issue. Yeah. Like if you can give one of them like a rest day every week and have Benintendi, Talkman, whoever slide in at DH that day that they're resting, sure. Sign me up for that. But Elijah, you mentioned in the past month that 850 OPS mark. Since the All-Star break, Edgar Caro has an 880 OPS and Kyle Teal has a 926. So it's just
a handful of games, right? But yeah, it's been great. Right. It's been great.
And the thing I want to note with Caro is on the season, like since he debuted, he's got a 90.4 zone contact rate. How many catchers, like primary catchers, do you guys think have a higher zone contact rate?
Honestly, I think zero, because Raleigh whiffs a ton, Baldwin whiffs too much, Contreras is having a down year. Maybe one, maybe I could see maybe a Will Smith. That's the one guy I can think of.
It's two, and you didn't.
Oh, it's two. Wow, I didn't name. So it's got to be some guys that aren't good though. That's the thing.
It's Keibert Ruiz and Adley Rutschman.
Okay, Ruiz. I should have said Ruiz, because Ruiz hits. It makes contact on everything, but it doesn't go anywhere. So exactly. I'm taking Caro over that. I would take, you know, the easily tick down in contact over a guy who, I mean, that's weirdly enough, you know, Aram Layton, who's the head of Just Baseball, his comp for Caro when he was coming up that he told me was Keibert Ruiz plus. That was what he always used to tell me. He was like, this is a better Keibert Ruiz, and that was his comp for Caro in 2023 when the Sox traded for him. And honestly, you know, if Keibert Ruiz is an okay catcher, if Caro is the upgraded version of that, cool.
Right,
exactly. That's great. So my thing is, I agree with you. It's best suited to be catching in DH. I do want to see the idea of Kyle Teal at first base a little, because I think that he could play there. He has the athleticism to play there for sure. Or Kyle Teal in a corner to spell a Benintendi or a Talkman if they come to the DH, right? So I think it's. I think you can play around with Teal a little. I don't want to do the whole, like, let's make him an outfielder. Like, no, I don't know. Let's not do that, right? They should be the catching tandem. But if the way to get them in the lineup 5 days a week is for Teal to get two games a week at either first base or left field, I'm open to that, because at this point you're probably running out an outfield of Benintendi, Robert, and Talkman next year, which is fine. You've got a veteran outfield to complement a very young infield and a very young pitching staff. But if that's your outfield, you need to be able to spell Talkman and Benny before Brandon Montgomery's arrival, which will then push those guys either off the team or into the DHing times, right? So that's like, if the easiest way to maximize your lineup is to try Teal in a corner 2 days a week, potentially, I'm very open to that. If it's Teal at first base a couple days a week in a given day where Vargas is at third and Colson's at short, that's also something I would consider. To answer the question in the chat, I do think Teal got a little bit of reps at first base in terms of, you know, pre-like work, but I don't think he ever got to the point of playing there in games. So that's the difference there. But these guys are just like, I just love watching both these guys. Honestly, guys, like I think these two are just so fun to watch. They're good energy. They're good catchers. They're good. It seems by all accords that they're good to work with for the pitching staff, right? I just want that in my lineup a little more than 3 days of half the games each on each of their sides, right?
Yeah. Nice problem to have.
It is a good problem. 100% a good problem.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of the last guy at the big league level who we have like, where's the innings? I'm trying to be patient. It's been 2 days. Curtis Meade has been on the roster for 3 games now, and he hasn't played. I get it, sort of, because you have Meidroth, you have Colson, you have Vargas, you have Soso, who's playing really well. You just traded for a guy who has been ridiculously good in the past handful, you know, stretch of time at the AAA level. Play the guy. You got to figure out if he's going to be a piece of this lineup every day come next year. And you got to do it sooner than later. Dylan, where do you slide Meade into this lineup, and how do you do it in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think that his best fit is at second base. And then, you know, you have Vargas at first, Chase Meidroth at short, and then Colson Montgomery at third. Cause I think that's sort of like the infield that can it just makes the most sense in my mind. And Meade's bat probably profiles a little bit better at second base. You could maybe slide him to a third or a first depending on the day, but you know, it's a versatile infielder, and you know, the White Sox have now four of them in their infield. They can play multiple positions on the dirt. But the thing with Meade is, like, you didn't get anything for Josh Rojas. You're not going to get anything for Josh Rojas because the trade deadline is passed. Cut bait. Get rid of him. What does he do that Curtis Meade can't do? And he's not going to develop. Like, he's already, what, like, over 30? Meade has, like, less than 100 big league games under his belt. He should be the everyday infielder. You can put him pretty much anywhere you want, and he's going to be fine. So I'm with it. I think Rojas should be off the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you have to do at that point. Jeff, where are you at with that?
Well, I'm curious, as you know, because part of this conversation is looking to 2026, right?
Yeah.
And I'm curious, when you look to 2026, who do you think is the best defensive shortstop and who's the best defensive second baseman?
It's tough. It really is.
I kind of wrestle with putting all these league average defenders out there.
It's tricky. I think that the answer that people might not want to hear, but I do probably believe, is that the next time the White Sox win the World Series, the shortstop will not be someone on this roster right now. That's kind of like the next time the White Sox are legitimately at that level as a team won't be someone that's on this roster. That's where I stand, because I do think that in 3 to 4 years, when this team is at that point, when that time comes, potentially, I see it as, if it's Billy Carlson, awesome. That's great. If it's Caleb Bonimer, awesome. That's great. If it's a free agent, awesome. That's great. If it's Rock Chulowski for next year's draft, even better, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I view the position. So I do think it is – I don't want to call it a stopgap, because that's not fair to Colson Montgomery and Chase Meidroth, because both of them have shown the ability to handle shortstop, right? It's not that neither of these guys can play. They can play shortstop, and they can play it at a decent level. Is Colson's body a little better for third? Is Meidroth's arm a little better for second? Yes and yes, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd
agree with, like, the shortstop of the World Series winning White Sox is not here yet. And like you said, Colson's profile is probably better suited for third base, but like, he has been a pretty solid shortstop defender so far. Like, it's been limited innings, but like, he's impressed me so far with how he's looked. I know Ian has been putting out videos for the past year and a half now where, you know, he's showing the world that he can stick at shortstop. And, you know, I watched the videos, but there was a certain part of me that was like, all right, we'll see how he plays in the big leagues first. But like, he's looked great at shortstop so far. So I could see him sticking at short, but I could very easily see him sliding to third and becoming just that big power bat. I actually have a question for you guys. If Colson Montgomery ended up being Max Muncy, Would you take that?
Yeah. You know, power over average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's flopper. That's the player that I think Elijah described earlier when talking about Colson.
And maybe not quite. I hope it's a little less of a drastic version. Like, yeah. Dude, honestly, I just pulled up Max Muncy's fan graphs. If Colson's walking at a 16% clip and hitting 35 bombs a year, sign me up. Yes is the answer. Max Muncy, maybe not right now, sure. But like Max Muncy's, if you look at Max Muncy's peak being from when he was 27 years old in 2018, through his age 32 season in 2023. In those, not taking COVID, removing COVID aside from that, right? So 5 seasons in his prime, it was 35 homers in 4 of those 5 seasons with a walk rate of 15% and a strikeout rate around 24. Yeah. I'm taking that. I'm taking that to the bank.
Max Muncy,
That's a WRC plus. Those seasons, WRC plus wise, 162, 133, 139, 107 in the down year, 118. I would take that. I would take that, especially because I think Colson would be a much better defender at third than Muncy would be too. That's the other factor you consider there. If Colson ends up at third, I think it's not just a decent third baseman, it's a plus third baseman. Dodgers Max Muncy, to be clear. There is 2 Max Muncys. I want to clarify that one. I think the plan right now should still be Colson Montgomery playing more shortstop than not come next season, I think, because I do think there's a better chance of him being the guy there long-term than Mydroth. But like I said, do I see a world where the real competing team of this roster has Colson at third, Mydroth at second, or somebody else at second potentially, and then a TBD at shortstop? That's probably how I see it. In the short term, with Miguel Vargas out, I would like to. I think you're going to see a lot more of the Sosa first, Colson third, Mydroth short, hopefully Curtis Meade second, even though Josh Rojas is playing again tonight. That's kind of how I see it for at least the short term right now.
You know, remember for so long, last year and even the year before, where second base just seemed like this black hole that the White Sox could never fill. It looked like, oh, they'll never figure this out.
Then magical for half a season.
You've got Meade possibly there, and several guys that we're going to talk about in the minor leagues who look like future second basemen.
Yeah, 100%. So it's a good problem to have again. Like, the infield is crowded. The White Sox infield hasn't been crowded in a while. I'll take a crowded infield over a lack of talent in the infield. That is definitely something I'm okay with. Brief mention of kind of the 3 names we haven't touched on. We talked about Curtis Meade. Quiet deadline for the White Sox. We know this, right? But Duncan Davitt, Ben Peoples, Gage Zeal, they had 3 arms, 2 being from the Rays organization, 1 being from the Yankees. At tonight, as we speak, really nice little start to the Knights run here for Davitt here. Duncan Davitt throws 6 1/3 tonight, a 3-hit, 2-run ball down in Charlotte. Ben Peoples has had a couple outings here. I think today was a little bit of a rough one for him. I didn't get to watch any of this yet because we were about to record. But, you know, just 3 guys, and then Gage Zeal is in Winston, right, Dylan? I think that's right.
Yeah.
He's in Winston there now. So 3 more guys just to keep an eye on. Zeal is going to be on our top 30, I know. I know that's a guy who will be on our top 30 list because he's been a pretty dependable starter. I mean, only 22 years old, has already pitched at the double-A level this season, and you know, through 86 2/3 innings, has a little bit over a 4 ERA. Very good command. It seems like more of a back-end guy, but generally a plus command guy. Dylan, what else you got on these pitchers?
The name that I want to highlight from those 3 is Ben Peoples. Like you said, it hasn't been a great like last couple outings, but like if you look at his pitch metrics and his fastball and slider combo is very similar to, and I know this is going to make some people mad, but it's very similar to Jordan Leisure. And when Leisure is on, he is great. Like
I'm sick of the Leisure slander, man. I'm so sick of it.
I know.
But
when he's on, when we saw him in LA this last series, when he's on, he is electric. And Peoples is very similar. It's a high vert fastball. It's coming in at around 97, 98, and then a slider that's getting good movement. It's hard. It's in the upper 80s. There's a changeup there that isn't like the best. It hasn't been thrown much, so I'm interested to see if, you know, Brian Bannister gets in the lab and adds a changeup for him, maybe a splitter, who knows. But, like, if you can add that to the White Sox bullpen, I think he could be a very good, like, setup seventh, eighth inning man. Because those type of pitchers, like the hard fastball, good hard slider combo, they're best used at the back of the bullpen. So I'm a very big Ben Peoples fan. I could see him being up shortly after, I don't want to say like this year, but like I could see him being up. I could see him being in the mix for bullpen years.
You just led us perfectly into our next segment, because the next thing we're going to talk on is guys that we see this year and what they've done. Peoples obviously just joining the organization is one example, but there's a lot of guys that have taken their game, not necessarily guys we were already high on or guys that have elevated their stock, both those archetypes. But really the category here is guys that have shown that they need a role on this team in 2020, as soon as 2026, whether it's been from a huge development standpoint, whether it's just been they just haven't got their shot yet. The guys that we, you know, really want to, you know, dive into, and for people, you know, in the chat, and so we got some new people that we love and guys we know here. We are talking prospects for sure tonight. We're talking nothing but prospects for the rest of this episode. And starting with these guys, they're kind of, you know, putting themselves on the map for 26. And I think that has to start with a guy in Sam Antonacci, who we're going to hopefully have on a pod here soon. I'm setting up an interview with him in the coming weeks, because it's just been ridiculous from him. Speaking of crowded infield, how do you find a way to get Sam Antonacci into this roster outlook, everything? Because he's playing third, he's playing second. We just talked about six guys that can play those two positions at the big league level. I don't know. Somebody floated to me the other day, last week when I posted a stat on him, can Antonacci play a corner in the outfield? And it got me thinking, I kind of can see Antonacci being a really solid left fielder. Left field kind of feels like where his speed, decent arm, and athleticism could actually play up pretty well. Is there maybe I'm getting ahead of myself a little here, a deadline Benintendi trade that could lead to an Antonacci in left field? Maybe that's just a weird potential idea for a year from now. What do you guys think is kind of the Antonacci route here to playing time if he keeps up what he's doing in Birmingham right now?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's just, where is his home? Because his bat is forcing him into the conversation, right? You know, does he have a home other than second base and maybe third base? You know, every time I watched him play, it was watching him at second base. And I never really gave him any consideration as thinking, does he have the arm or foot speed for third base or the outfield? And I'm still not sure, to be honest. Second base is obviously the best position for him, but, you know, like we said, Mydroth is
six
there,
guys.
Reed is there. Who knows who else is there? I don't know. Do you guys think he could? What do you think about third base as well as the corner out?
I think third is probably where I'd go right now, because in my opinion, I don't want to say a better defender than Chase Mydroth, but his arm is better. That's like the primary thing that you need for third base. But I'm not going to rule him out as being the second baseman. Like, he, for all we know, could, like, Chase Mydroth could fall off a cliff at, not literally, like, stats wise, he could tank, and like, Sam Antonacci could end up being the everyday second baseman for the 2026 White Sox. So like, we don't know. Like, Mydroth has been in a slump in the past like six-ish weeks, yes. But I'm not ruling Antonacci out. I'm not ruling Mydroth out. But I think that his fastest track to the majors is probably that left field role, especially if there's an offseason Andrew Benintendi trade, a deadline Andrew Benintendi trade. There's a lot of different ways that you could mix Sam Antonacci into the current White Sox roster. But I think that third base left field role is probably the quickest. I'm not sure what you guys think.
It's messy. It is going to be messy. But it's, again, a good problem that you've got a variety of high floor infielders that are going to fill out this roster, and that you can see where it goes from there. Because, you know, if Sam Antonacci or Chase Mydroth is a platoon/bench guy, that's a great piece to have on your bench. I mean, that's what Adrian just said it in our chat. Our guy Adrian at Future Sox, you know, the left-handed bat could be a good platoon for Mydroth eventually. Like, if that's the, like, yes, the ideal situation is both these guys pan out and they're both, you know, everyday players somehow, and they end up being really solid pieces. If the lower outcome of both their potentials is a platoon at second base, like, and you've got players that are starters at short and third that have earned those spots, cool. Like if that's what it is, and then the White Sox add another piece, if they go out and sign a big free agent at a corner, and then it becomes Vargas at the other corner, whichever guy they sign at the other corner, Colson at short, and Antonacci and Mydroth splitting time at second, like, that's a great lineup, depending on who that free agent potentially is, right? Like that's exciting stuff, and that's why it's going to be interesting. So he's the one guy in terms of hitters. Jacob Gonzalez could be another one we mentioned there, the guy who like is going to get a shot at some point. Do I think Jacob Gonzalez can truly earn a lineup spot over a Mydroth and Antonacci Amede? I don't really see it. I'm not sure yet. But, you know, has had a better season than last year, and I think at the least could be playing a bench role on this team next year.
Yeah, he's been surprising with the torpedo bat. You know, Elijah was sort of in the boat of like, yeah, torpedo bat's just a fad. You know, it's going to go out of style soon. But, you know, it's genuinely like, I don't want to say changed Gonzalez's game, but like, he's looked better than he ever has in the White Sox organization while using the torpedo bat. And yeah, he went through a rough June and a little bit into July, but like, he earned a promotion to AAA, and like, it's not like, oh, we're just going to bump you up because there's no room for you in Birmingham or in Winston. Like if you want to keep playing, you have to go to Charlotte. But like, he like genuinely earned it. And you know, that Charlotte run environment is exactly what I think Gonzalez needed, because the one knock on his game so far has been, where's the power? Like, he was showing like that 30 home run, I don't want to say 30 home run, but like that 20 to 30 home run upside in college at Ole Miss. And then he transitioned into wood bats and it all went away. So if he can just get in that power stroke in Charlotte and just continue to lift balls, I think that he could earn a promotion. And, you know, maybe it's the end of the year, maybe it's the start of 26. I'm not sure, but I think that I would like to see him at least get a chance. I'm not expecting anything from him. I've tempered my expectations on him from where I was when he got drafted, and even into the beginning parts of last year. But like, he's been solid. And, you know, if at the end of the year, if Jacob Gonzalez is that 28th man on the roster, it would not shock me at all.
You know, as I'm listening to you, Dylan, this has been a really fun year in Charlotte, because you've had all these guys come, all these prospects come through. And now, you know, we're getting to look at a lot of these new pitchers, a lot of good pitching prospects. I'm thinking about 2026, not only in Chicago, but look what you might have going on in Charlotte. You know,
yeah.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Being in the chat, mentioned William Bergoglio. You mentioned Jacob Gonzalez. Nishida will probably be here.
Braden
Antonacci's here if he's not.
Antonacci.
Chicago. I mean, it could really be exciting. And these guys
are running
the shuttle up and back to Chicago all season long.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Keeping us going here, because I want to keep hitting these things. You guys want to go rotation next? You want to go bullpen when we're talking about some of these guys that are kind of putting themselves on 26 and what that outlook looks like?
I think rotation, because that's the fun part.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll start in the major league level, and then we'll work our way down, because obviously we're going to talk about Tanner McDougal. That's kind of one of the guys that's the clear, you know, boom, 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 this guy's on the radar now from this season, at least. I still think I'm looking at Christian Hopper as more of a 27 and beyond type of situation, right? So when you're looking at next year, that's the one guy who stands out as the breakout. Looking at the White Sox roster as it stands, I put out a stat the other day. People are really not like super high on him compared to the beginning of the year. I really believe Sean Burke is figuring it out. It's taking some time. You're seeing the ups and downs, and like, the stats don't really do it justice. But Burke has essentially had one bad start a month since the first month of the year. He had a really rough April. And since April, it's basically been one game a month where he can't find the location and four games a month where he looks gross. Like, it really has been that. And it's been – the command is still a long ways away. But when you look at the increase of just the stuff, the pure raw stuff, in, you know, five of his last six starts, taking out the one blow up, have been 5+ strikeouts, have been, you know, 6 or less hits allowed. There's a lot to like there. This last start this past week against the Angels, through 5 innings, his stuff was as good as we've seen it since his big league debut, probably. And then the 6th inning, it blows up. He loses the feel. He gives up a few runs. He inherits, you know, the reliever inherits a run that comes in. That's whatever. He gives up 3 runs in the 6th inning before getting pulled. So be it. I think he's in that rotation still. Shane Smith, I think we saw coming off this injury, like, once he gets a, you know, the arm is taxed, it's the most he's ever thrown. I think you're still penciling him into that rotation when he gets a full off season to really build up, to get his arm right, to have that kind of strength. I think those are two guys you're penciling in. I still think Jonathan Cannon, at least to open the year, is penciled in that rotation. I don't know if he sticks long-term when you get a lot of these guys coming up, but I do think Cannon has shown enough to believe that he's a rotation guy, at least starting the year. Davis Martin's an interesting one. I think Davis Martin would have been, you know, the perfect trade candidate at this deadline, but no starting pitchers in all of baseball moved pretty much. Starting pitchers, which was a weird little market trend at the deadline. So Davis Martin is under contract. Whether you move him in the offseason or not, I don't know. So if he's on the roster, though, those are four guys that are probably in your rotation to open the year. If they trade one, if it's a Martin or maybe a Cannon maybe or something like that, right, then you have three guys penciled in. What do you stack out with the rest of this rotation when you think about the fact that if Noah Schultz is healthy, Tanner McDougal is going to be ready for a big league promotion probably at the end of this year, if not beginning of next year. You're still hoping Hagen Smith is part of that fold next year. You've got Thorpe and Adams both coming back from TJ in that kind of probably 2 months into the year, give or take. So you're not penciling them in. There's so many guys to really consider here. Who do you guys see as kind of the most clear, like, this guy can earn a rotation spot?
In my opinion, it's the two names that you led off with. It's Noah Schultz and Tanner McDougal. If they want to go full-on youth movement, like, let's see what the pitching that we have built up, let's see what it looks like at the big league level. You know, we've been talking for so long about how the White Sox have this glut of pitching at the minor league levels. And, you know, we haven't seen a lot of arms come up. But if, you know, if they just want to show us, like, Noah Schultz, Tanner McDougal, here you go. These are, in my opinion, the two most talented arms in the system right now. Like, if you want to put those guys in the big league rotation and say, all right, run free, go out and show your stuff, like, that would be so fun. And I think it happens, because when you look at the team for next year, it's not a lot of guys who it's a lot of guys who have had that experience, especially on the pitching side. Like, yeah, Shane Smith is a rookie this year, but, like, he's the youngest of the rotation. And especially if you go out and maybe sign another piece, that's 3-4 guys where they all have 2+ years of big league experience. So you can afford to go and give that fifth spot or that fourth spot to a rookie. Like, and especially if, you know, maybe they don't perform. I have all the confidence in the world in Schultz and McDougal, but, like, I just want to see what their stuff looks like at the big league level.
Yeah, I have to think the White Sox have pretty much told us what their plan is for Noah Schultz in 2026 by sending him to Charlotte, because they're not going to leave him in Charlotte very long, if at all, next season.
The only thing there is that he hasn't thrown innings. He doesn't have the innings to be a full big league starter next year. So the pushback I have for you there, Dylan, is I don't think you're bringing – when you factor in the injury guys, which is Thorpe and Adams, who I do think get a crack at the rotation fairly soon upon return from their rehab starts, you're not starting the clock with Schultz or McDougal if you're expecting them to be pulled out of the rotation, right? Once you put a guy like that in your rotation, you're sticking them in your rotation. So – if a Davis Martin trade happens, then I'd be more inclined to give at least one of Tanner. I don't think you can give both those guys an opening day rotation spot because of the fact that you know you're getting two starters back off TJ who are going to get a crack at the rotation most likely, unless you're just saying, hey, you know, Thorpe and Adams, you guys aren't starters anymore. You've gotten bumped. But, like, those guys profile so much better as starters. Those aren't really relief profiles with both those guys being very command centric, right? So my thing there is I'm just not sure how you make that happen from the standpoint of, like, you don't want to bring a guy up and then just be Schultz and McDougal and whoever are too talented to say, hey, you get 2 months of starting and then you're getting bumped for guys that are older than you and ahead of you in the pecking chart, right? So if the plan is you trade Davis Martin, maybe you're trading Jonathan Cannon, then I can see that a little more. But I don't think you get a debut from both those guys if you still have, you know, some of those guys in the roster. And I don't think you're ready to trade a Burke, a Smith, or a Cannon. Martin's the one who I think is a no-brainer trade candidate. I don't see how – I like Davis Martin. I think his story's awesome. He's come a long way. He's a solid pitcher. He's been a solid pitcher all season. I see Davis Martin as, like, the most obvious offseason trade candidate, honestly.
I don't know. I might push back a little bit only because you need so many starters.
You do.
Season. And, you know, I hate to even say it, but, you know, the fact that the possibility of all those guys that you mentioned being healthy and ready to go in spring and start of the season, that's not going to be the case. You know, baseball kind of takes care of these things itself, unfortunately. And so,
yeah, so we'll see how that, and that's what happened this year, right? You thought you had Thorpe and Madison Adams penciled in your rotation, and then there they go, right?
We thought we were going to have this killer rotation in Charlotte, and these guys would be running a shuttle up to Chicago. They all got work. So hopefully
it's very fair.
Epidemic proportions next year like it's been this year, but there will be a couple of injuries, a couple of setbacks.
We'll have
I think there's plenty of innings for all these guys.
I hope so. I hope that's the case. And it's just going to be tricky to figure out the balance of how to get these guys up at the right times and also just manage time, right? I know fans from a fan perspective hate hearing this, but like if this team is coming along in the positive direction, we hope it is, and they're developing the right way, you got to factor that, like who do you want that extra year of control on the most? Like, honestly, next year is still going to be a building year. It's going to be better. I really believe coming off this year, like, I think this team can win 70, 75 games next year for sure. I think this team could push to 500 next year if everything really goes well, right? Like, that'd be amazing. But ultimately, like, who are the guys you want that extra year of control on? And you know, do you hold them a little back because of that? I don't know.
What do you guys see in terms of Tanner McDougal? Does he see any time in Chicago this year? Does he vie for the rotation early next year? Does he spend any time in Charlotte? And also, Hagen Smith, what are you seeing in general from him since he's been back from Arizona?
With McDougal, I think that he's like the innings load that he's on right now. I think that it is sort of like shut down any idea of him coming up to Chicago, at least this year, because, you know, he's on a three inning per start limit right now. And I don't think that they would limit his innings per start if they were also going to bring him up. Like, yeah, you know, Grant Taylor early on in the year, but that was simply because, you know, they wanted to fast track him. And, you know, if they were going to limit him to three innings, it made no sense for him to be in Birmingham. So with McDougal, I think it's probably early 26. And then
before you go to Hagen, McDougal is Rule 5 eligible this offseason. For people that don't know what that is, that means technically if he is not added to the 40-man this offseason because he was drafted 4 seasons ago, he's eligible to be picked in the Rule 5 draft like the White Sox found with Jane Smith, with Mike Vassell, two great snipes. They're not knowing they're going to have him on the 40 man, knowing he's almost at his innings limit. I kind of think we see McDougal out of the pen in September. I think it seems like we're getting that indication from people in the White Sox media a little bit and just kind of talking to some people around. I think that the innings limiting route with him is, hey, like, you're at your innings limit pretty much. You've got 10 innings left in the season. Let's throw 7 one-inning spurts out of the bullpen and call it a day, or 2-inning spurts out of the bullpen and call it a day in Chicago. He doesn't need to be in Charlotte. I really don't see McDougal as a guy who needs to touch Charlotte. I think he gets a cup of tea here in September out of the bullpen, and then he goes into spring training either competing for a rotation spot or heading back to the minors for a couple months, which would be perfectly fine.
Yep.
I could very easily see that.
Hagen, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then with Hagen, like, it's just been such an up-and-down year with Hagen because, you know, if you look at the box score, like, his stats look great. Like, he's striking out everybody. He's not allowing run. Well, maybe not great recently, but, you know, he's striking out a lot of guys. He's limiting hits. Like, a lot of his earned runs are, it's been like walks, and then they end up coming around to score. But then when you just look at, like, his stuff and just look at how he compares to his draft year at Arkansas last year, it's ticked down just across the board. And, you know, I know White Sox fans weren't exactly – it was a split camp on Hagen on the day of the draft last year. And it's just – it's so weird because he was sitting 95 or higher and, like, touching 100 at Arkansas last year. And now, like, I haven't seen him throw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball in a game this year. And it's just – I don't know if he's hurt. I don't think that the organization would be letting him throw if he was hurt. But at the same time, you know, something's not right here. And we've talked about it a lot. So I'm not going to say that he's hurt. I'm not going to say that he's fully healthy either. So I have no clue. But there's just something still left to be desired with Hagen that I don't think that he gets a crack at the opening day 26 rotation. And maybe not – he could stay in the minors, like, all of next year, maybe see a September call-up in 26 next year. So I'm not sure. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I'm with you. I think it's been frustrating. Honestly, it has been. I think seeing the stuff tick down has been not fun. We don't like seeing that. I think it's something we don't want to be seeing. We want to see it tick back up. With him, like the command is down, yes, but I'm more worried about the stuff than the command. Ultimately, command for that level of a pitcher, I think, can come and can go, and they can kind of find that in the offseason more. I don't know what – I mean, Hagen Smith sitting at 92, 93 is just nothing I expected. I did not even see that at all. So I'm very curious to see how that works out. So we'll see with that. I want to get into the bullpen, and then we're going to do a real quick run through some guys who went off in July. Briefly, the bullpen – first thing to mention here, Zach Franklin, a guy we've been preaching should be in the big leagues already, heads to AAA today. That's a guy who I don't even think needs to spend much time in Charlotte. I would just let him get a little cup of tea there maybe and call it a day and just send him straight to Chicago because I think he could be. This bullpen is also sneaky crowded going into next season. I think you look at the big league roster right now, they also just picked up two kind of really interesting arms from the right. Brewers on waivers, Brian Hudson and Elvis Peguero. Is that right, Peguero? And Peguero, those are two guys who were legit relievers for Milwaukee last year for a good Milwaukee team. It's not like they were guys just like killing innings for like a bottom feeder, right? Like they were serious, like pen arms for a good Milwaukee team last season. And then have had really rough years, but like both could easily cement themselves in the bullpen. And that's not even starting with all the guys that are already in Chicago and already in the system, right? You got a Grant Taylor. That's a lock. You've got a Mike Vassell at this point has locked himself in. Unless he's traded in the offseason, Stephen Wilson has earned a spot in the bullpen for sure going into next season. That's already three guys that you start with there that are pretty much locks. Then you have the group of Jordan Leisure, Tyler Gilbert, potentially Brandon Iser, who I all think like have a reasonable, like they, it would not be crazy to say they're going to be in the rotation or the bullpen at all. I think they all have a very good shot. You've got Tyler Alexander, who's been a decent veteran pickup and out there. And then you look at AAA. We talk about Zach Franklin. We just talked about Ben Peoples. And then you've got all the other options from Mikelman Gonzalez. Frazier Ellard is another guy who I still like. Cam Boozer is still in Charlotte right now. You've still got Uriarte in Charlotte. You've got Peyton Paulette in Charlotte. Peguero, who I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of guys who viably – Gus Varland got yesterday's on the 60-man. He looked really good at times in spring training, right? There's a lot of guys who could factor into this bullpen. I don't know if you even need to add Prelander Baroa. Thank you, Alec. Prelander Baroa will be coming off TJ. I was sure you were going to get there, right? Like, there's a lot of pen options, and I don't even think you need to spend much. I think you can maybe get one vet if you just want to give a little solidify, right? If you want to have one guy who's just really experienced. But I don't really think you need to do much with this bullpen. You've got 12 pitchers, and that's not even mentioning the starters who could slide into the bullpen, right? There's plenty of guys who could kind of shift into bullpen roles among starters, like a Palish, like a Shane Murphy, Riley Gowans is a guy I could see taking up in a bullpen role. Like, there's a lot of guys like that. The bullpen's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think that especially the back end of that bullpen, if Grant Taylor is like the closer of the future, we've seen Chris Getz come out recently saying he's not going to shut the door on him coming back to the rotation, which I hope that he does. But, if he is that closer of the future, you have a really fun 7th, 8th, 9th combo of a lefty specialist in the 7th, maybe a Mike Vassell if he wants to, if they shift him into that fully like one inning role instead of that Swiss Army knife. And then you got Prelander Baroa and Grant Taylor in the 8th and 9th. And that is just, that's really fun to dream on. And there's a lot of talent in the bullpen that is going to end up being in AAA next year just because there's not going to be enough room. And especially if you go out and you sign a bullpen role, or even if you go out and splurge on a closer like we've been exploring the last couple months. But like, it's going to be a pretty fun bullpen to watch next year.
Yeah, I'd really like to see Zach Franklin and Peyton Paulette this year. Yeah. An idea what they can do.
With you.
This year and last year, when the White Sox were so inept, they set a record for blown saves. And they were, before Grant Taylor, they were on a pace to do that this year. I'm hoping Grant Taylor is the sea change that turns all of this finally, and we get a little more stability and consistency in the bullpen. Again, though, given that they're not going to be competitive next year, we could still see a lot of the young guys cycle through and figure out what we have for sure.
Yeah, there's plenty of options. I think welcoming Gonzalez could be another guy who gets more innings this year. I think Peguero from the Brewers should get some innings out in Chicago this year, right? Like, there's plenty of options here. I just, when I really like break this down and we talk through this, I don't know if you need to add a single pitcher in the offseason. I think they might want to add a veteran either in the back of the bullpen or in the rotation just to kind of get that depth in there. I think that this is the offseason where the White Sox typically operate in a quantity aspect over a quality aspect, and that has been the trend in the past couple of years. Chris Guest seems ready to spend some money. There's money coming from Ishbia. I'm ready for a quality over quantity offseason, guys. I think there's a lot of quantity in this system, in this organization. When you really break it down, especially on the pitching side, I want two big gets and one like gets, get it? Gets. You know, I want one like splash and two puddles at least, right? You know, I think that you need two legit ads this offseason that you can make guys fit in a lot of places. You can, if you want to go get a shortstop, if this White Sox say, you know, screw it, Bo Bichette at the top of this lineup is what we think is going to make this lineup better. I don't love Bo Bichette, but I'm just hypotheticals, right? You can make the infield work around that, right? If they say, you know what, we're going to throw a massive bag at Kyle Schwarber. Yes, that kind of eliminates the Caro Teal playing as much. You find a way. You get Kyle Teal in left field or at first base sometimes, right? Like, you make that stuff happen. You got to make a big splash. There's a lot of depth in this rotation and in this bullpen, honestly. There really is.
I saw a list of pending free agents for next year. And it's interesting that Mariner Zach is with us tonight in the chat because Randy Rosarena was the guy that jumped out at me as filling one of our corner outfield spots.
Is he a free agent?
I think so.
I thought he had one more. I'm pretty sure he had one more. I could be wrong, though. Let me double check that because I think when I was looking at the outfield market, I was like, okay, you got Tucker, you got Bellinger. And then you got nothing. Like, that was my gauge on the outfield market. So maybe I was wrong there with Rosarena. Yeah, he has one more year. He has one more year of arbitration at Rosarena. So yeah, because the outfield market is super weak. And that's what I remember. I mean, there's a lot of guys. So it's like, you got to find a way to make a splash. And there's going to be a lot of teams. Like obviously, Tucker's going to play for the White Sox. Like, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. Tucker going from the Cubs to the White Sox would make my life come true. But I don't think that's happening. Beyond that, even Schwarber, like, is probably a pipe dream with the season he's putting up right now. It would be sick. I would love to see Kyle Schwarber in the White Sox lineup. I think that would be the perfect fit. But there's a lot of guys beyond that, right? I know, you know, from a fandom place, like you know, nobody wants Josh Naylor on the White Sox, but, like, you know, Gleyber Torres, Luis Arraez, there's some guys out there. Yeah, Eugenio Suarez, if you want to go that direction, right, with more of a corner infield guy. If you want to ball out on a Cody Bellinger, I don't hate it. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, Muditek, somebody just mentioned, it's another good shout in the chat from Adrian, Muditek and Murakami coming over from Japan. Super highly touted Japanese power hitter, a lot of whiff there. So definitely some because there's Dylan shaking his head. A little bit of a scary profile there with Muditek. But there's a lot of options. There really is a lot of options. Even with a limited market, you can find a way to make a splash and just get a key piece or two to fill out what is a pretty deep, you know, solid high floor type of roster.
And one more thing that I'm going to mention is it makes sense, given the outfield market, why they kept Luis Robert. Because if he were to hit the open market, I think he's probably the second, maybe third best outfielder.
He's buying Bellinger. Bellinger's getting paid. Bellinger's getting paid.
Fair.
Yeah.
So, but either way, he's still at the top of that outfield market. And it makes sense why they kept him. Because if he can revert back to 23 form, that would just make this lineup a whole lot
better. Yeah, I would have, if you asked me this a few months ago, I would have been like, nope. But I was at the Mets game with some of the JV guys and we were talking through some things. And the Cody Bellinger idea is kind of getting in my head. And as Alec just pointed out, the idea that he can play center and first, because if you trade off of Robert, you can have a Bellinger in center. If you keep a Robert and you want Bellinger playing first 3-4 days a week and playing some outfield to spell Talkman and Benny, I kind of like it. Yeah, it's interesting, but I kind of do like it. So we'll see. We'll have plenty of time to talk about free agents. I know we're already kind of low on time because there's so much to talk about today, and this was a good conversation to be having. We're just going to fly through the levels real quick. One guy that impressed you guys in July, boom, 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 starting in Charlotte. Dylan, take it away.
Will Robertson is my name. In July, hit .296 with a .1023. OPS. Like, it's ridiculous stuff from a guy who just came over. I forget when exactly the trade was made. It might have been in July. I'm not sure, but either way, a 1023 OPS in any given month is great. You know, he hit four homers, struck out 15 times, but we don't have to talk about that. So yeah, Will Robertson is my pick. He absolutely tore covers off the baseball in July.
Yeah, like it. Jeff, what you got?
I'm going to go with Brian Ramos. I keep hoping that we see a breakout from him. And July was a good month, you know, with six home runs and a triple, three doubles, a .276 batting average, .345 OVP, .579 slugging. It's been a rough year for him, but hopefully he's going to have a strong second half.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Yoenndris Gomez, guys, let's get this guy to the bigs. Another guy, we talk about all this depth, like 25-year-old waiver claim who was part of the Dodgers and the Yankees organizations. I'm never going to be mad about taking a pitcher out of either of those organizations' pipelines, right? Struggled at the big league level in a handful of outings this season. In July, four starts made with a 1.42 ERA, comes out August 1st, makes another start of one run, four innings. He's only throwing max five innings a start. He hasn't really been stretched out as a full starter. Put him in the bullpen. Let's give this guy bulk innings out of the bullpen during the next month or two. See if you have anything. Going into next season, you've got all these arms. Let's see if you got anything from a 25-year-old waiver claim who's been really, really good in Charlotte all season, honestly. Heading down to Birmingham. Dylan, start it off.
I'm going to go with William Bergoya. In July, batted .302 with a .356 on base. His worst slugging month, May was his worst slugging month with a .271 slugging in May. July was a bit better, .323 slug. So while he batted .302, it only equates to a .679 OPS, which, you know, from a guy like Bergoya, you're never going to be like that 1,200, 1,300 OPS hitter. But the thing I want to point out with Bergoya, not only did he walk more than he struck out, he walked eight times and struck out only five times in the entire month of July. He also stole more bases than he struck out. He was 8-for-9 on stolen base attempts in July. And yeah, it's not a lot of impact. 28 hits, only one of them was for extra bases. It was a triple. But like when you look at Bergoya's game, it's a really fun profile, and he is just the perfect, just, all right, I'm going to stick the bat out there and I'm going to hope that it finds a hole. So
do you see a major leaguer there, Dylan?
It's so interesting because like the type of player that he is, like limiting strikeouts wise, yes, absolutely. But then when you look at the lack of impact in the bat, and yeah, Birmingham is a tough place to hit homers. It's tough to stack up, but
I think it's an elite bench guy. Like, yeah, I think that's the guy you would absolutely love to have, a guy on the last spot of your bench who can play three infield spots and steal you a crap ton of bags and give you a quality at bat every time he gets in a bat.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. Yeah.
So you see him challenging Brooks Baldwin for his utility.
I'm hoping it could be different spots. Yes, maybe, but I also think Baldwin could be more of the utility outfielder with Bergoya being more of the utility infielder. I think those are two guys that are, you know, useful players to have on your bench. Jeff, who you got in Birmingham?
Well, I can't
do it
on Nishida. You know, what a month he had, you know, at least the last 30 days, .342 batting average, .474 OBP. You got he and Bergoya at the top of that lineup. No wonder that team never loses anymore. It's amazing. You know, 18 walks to 14 strikeouts, 12 out of 13 stolen bases. I think there might be a little prospect fatigue with Nishida, but he's finishing really strong.
It's such a funny profile. I have no idea how to like expect or think about Nishida. It's been one of the guys that's boggled my brain for the last year and a half. Right. I don't know, but it's awesome. He's doing his thing. He's having that month where it's like, man, this guy just keeps getting on base, and it's always fun to watch.
Somebody asked me on Twitter, you know, what I see as his role. And I think his role is they park him in Charlotte and he's Brooks Baldwin's backup. If Baldwin ever gets hurt or goes into a slump, then Nishida becomes that utility player.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see it. I just like the whole pitching staff. I'm not even going to give a name here. Just like the starting pitching in Birmingham. Yeah. That's my July like month there. Riley Gowans, you know, his last four starts with a .78 ERA. Shane Murphy with a .123 ERA in his last four starts. McDougal with a .251. Jake Palach with a .205. just great, great starting pitching in Birmingham this past month. And Birmingham, like, shout out to the Birmingham Barons. Holy cow, this team might win the Southern League again. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. They really might, depending on how many guys get pulled off that roster, because they're going to lose some key pieces here probably. If they keep this type of talent and they add a few more pieces potentially to it, with Antonacci, Nishida, Bergoglio, Braden Montgomery in that lineup, and a handful of these pitchers, like, this team is the best team in the Southern League, and I'm not hesitant to say that, honestly. Heading down to Winston.
Yeah, Connor McCullough coming out of the bullpen. Tyler Schlarp come down there and turn things around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
such a good team.
Second half record.
It's got to be absurd. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be really, really good. Is what it is. Yeah. Do you have it?
I don't.
I think.
Let's see.
I think in the second half, or after Antonacci got called up, they're 15-3. I want to say. Wow. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
they have like 12 in a row and 15 out of 16. I mean, insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So they've been incredible. Winston, let's rapid fire these things. Dylan, Winston, who you got?
Samuel Zavala. This was his best month OPS wise. It was 780 OPS. The walks and strikeouts were finally balanced out in July. You know, he had months in April and May where it's 26 walks to 26 strikeouts to 9 walks, 22 strikeouts to 9 walks in May. But then in July, 21 strikeouts to 18 walks. And, you know, he's finally tapping into that power stroke, hit a home run and 4 doubles in July. That's his most extra base hits in a month. Got on base at a 4.15 clip, stole 9 bags. It was a solid month from Zavala and Winston, and he finally looks like that key piece in the Dylan Cease trade.
Nice. Jeff, what you got?
You know, speaking of Zavala, he's up to 240 on the season. I'm not sure we ever thought that, right?
He's getting there.
Yeah.
Jeff, who you got in Winston?
I'm going to give a shout out to Christian Opper because he really seems to be getting things turned around, and you know, he's settling in and having a strong. He got off to a little bit of a rough start, but he's had a couple of really nice outings.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. Quick, let's see. Who do I want to go with here? I didn't even have a pick for Winston off the dome. I'm curious. Let's see. Half a month of Antonacci, exactly. Let's go Alec Makarevich. Alec Makarevich with a very quality – he was actually the White Sox minor league hitter of the month, I believe, from the organization earlier this week. So he got some recognition from the media earlier this week. Good to see him just have a big month. This is a guy who we mentioned for an undrafted guy, we knew he was going to put up some numbers at the lower levels in comparison to some other guys. In the month of July, really impressive. Over 900 OPS, 4 home runs, a handful of other extra base hits. Just a nice month from him. Heading to Kannapolis, who you guys got in Kannapolis, and then we'll wrap this up for the night and get to White Sox Mariners in 7 minutes.
I'm going to go with Caleb Bonnemer. This was after a slump in July where it was a 557, or sorry, slump in June where it was a 557 OPS, turned it around in July with an 865 OPS, 3 homers, 10 walks to 14 strikeouts, 8 doubles in July, batted 270, slugged 500, which was his best slugging month of the year. It was great to see from Bonnemer, especially after that cold stretch he went through in June. It was great to see him get back on track and be that top-end prospect that the White Sox got in the second round last year. And he has more than blown my expectations away from him in his first full year.
100%. Jeff, you got in Kenny.
More than anyone else, the Cannonballers really benefited from the All-Star break, you know. All these, like Bonnemer, it's his first year, and he was starting to wear down. You can see he's refreshed now, and he's back in the groove after getting some time off. And my guy is Wolcow. I mean, the same thing. He went into the All-Star break sick. I mean, he was crushing it in June, and then he got sick. And I think the time off finally gave him a chance to get better, and he's really looking like he's back in the groove again.
Yeah.
He hit around 240 with a 300 OBP in July, and that's a big step forward.
Yeah. I'll finish up with Pierce George shout here out of the bullpen. Pierce George was a one of those save money, or not even actually a save money guy. He was just a later round college arm last year out of the bullpen. Gets up to 103, 104. We've always known this stuff is nasty. But man, July, it's starting to come together for him. He really struggled most of the season. And in July, he goes 10 innings, 0.9 ERA, 11 strikeouts. Only four hits allowed in those 10 innings pitched in July for Pierce George. So a guy who I think could move pretty quickly out of the bullpen if things keep going well. This was great. I got a dash. I got some other stuff to take care of here and my trip with some family. But this was awesome. Really, really fun doing this with the three of us. This was a good time for sure. And we will definitely be doing this more often. As a reminder, just after, those who are just kind of tuning into the end here and finding the episode later. Future Talks is now part of the Just Baseball Network. Super exciting news for us. We are fired up. We're going to have even more content coming your way soon. Appreciate you guys joining tonight. And this was fun. Let's go watch the White Sox beat the Mariners, hopefully, huh?
Yeah.
Sounds great. Next week, we'll talk about all the draftees who are showing up in Winston and Kannapolis.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next time on the Roundup.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.